So tonight we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 6, Dhyana Yoga, text number 26. Yuto yuto nishchalati manas chanchalam astiram tatas tato niyamyaitad atman yeva vishan nayet. From wherever the mind wanders, due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. Purport. The nature of the mind is flickering and unsteady, but a self-realized yogi has to control the mind. The mind should not control him. One who controls the mind, and therefore the senses as well, is called Goswami or Swami. And one who is controlled by the mind is called Godas, or the servant of the senses. A Goswami knows the standard of sense happiness. In transcendental sense happiness, the senses are engaged in the service of Rishikesha, or the supreme owner of the senses, Krishna. Serving Krishna with purified senses is called Krishna consciousness. That is the way of bringing the senses under full control. What is more, that is the highest perfection of yoga practice. Om Jnanatimanandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. So, on this path of Krishna consciousness, we, to be successful, have to become expert at controlling our minds. The mind is like a little naughty child. And the intelligence is compared by Prabhupada to be like the mother. The mother has to train the child how to behave properly. A little child will sometimes behave nicely under the mother's direction, and then sometimes you just do complete, total nonsense. So, sometimes our minds are nicely fixed in Krishna consciousness, and sometimes they go wild, they go running here and there, they become acting in ways which are not at all conducive for our spiritual advancement. So if we are going to be successful in actually achieving perfection, then we have to become expert at controlling the mind. And this verse is a very good verse for reminding us the importance of keeping the mind under control. From whatever and wherever the mind wanders, due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must withdraw it and bring it back into the soul of the self. You can just mentally picture yourself, you know, reaching out, and your mind goes running off, and you just say, okay, mind, you grab it and pull it back. It's like that. You see your mind's going away from Krishna, you just say, wait a minute, whoa, grab it, bring it back. Fix yourself in Krishna. So there's many ways to do that. In fact, there's 9 different ways to do that. That's called Navha. In Sanskrit language, it's called Navha, which means 9. Vidha, which means types. And then Bhakti, of course, that's, you know, Bhakti Yoga. So Navha, Vidha, Bhakti. The first is by hearing. You can hear some nice lecture being given on the Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam. You can hear some kirtan. You see? So, by hearing, you can bring your mind back, getting absorbed in the transcendental subject matter of Krishna consciousness. Or you can chant. You can chant Hare Krishna. You can sing some bhajans. You can tell one of your friends about Krishna or one of your family members. Or you can write also. You can do some writing. You can write an article or write a letter to a friend and tell them about Krishna consciousness. That is called chanting. And that also makes it very easy to get the mind absorbed by talking about Krishna, writing about Krishna, speaking about Krishna, you know, singing a kirtan, giving a lecture, you know, somehow giving someone a book about Krishna. This is called chanting. So when you're engaged in telling others about Krishna or spreading Krishna consciousness, then it's like now I'm telling you about the science of Krishna consciousness. So this it makes it very easy for my mind to be fixed in Krishna when I'm telling you about Krishna. The third item is very, very important. It is called smaranam, which means remembrance. Remembering Krishna actually is the fruit of one who engages his sense of hearing and sense of speaking or writing in the service of the Lord. That person, he or she, then enters into a state which is called smaranam, remembrance of the Lord. In fact, we have a very simple principle in our Krishna consciousness movement. It all hinges on one simple rule which has the positive and negative sides to it. The positive side is always remember Krishna. The negative side is never forget Krishna. You see, this is the sum and substance of the Krishna consciousness movement, the Krishna consciousness process. Always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna, not even for a moment. So there's so many ways you can remember Krishna. You can remember how Krishna lifted the Govardhan hill to protect the inhabitants of Vrindavan from the devastating rain sent by Indra. You can remember how Krishna danced the Rasa dance with the gopis and satisfied their desire to have that conjugal loving relationship with him. You can think of how Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna to give knowledge to us souls who are lost and trapped in karma chakra. You can think about how Krishna went to Dwarka, how he went to Mathura, how he killed the Agasura demon, how he subdued the Kaliya serpent, how he subdued the whirlwind demon by making himself heavier than the heaviest and making the demon crash to the ground by becoming very, very heavy. You can remember some nice verses from the Bhagavad Gita. There's thousands, literally thousands and thousands of ways you can remember Krishna. When you drink water, you can remember the Krishna, the taste of the water. When you see just like outside the window right now, there's light out there. That's the influence of the sun. Although we don't directly see the sun glow, the influence of the sun is still there. It's lighting up the street right now. So just by looking at that stained glass window, actually, you're getting the light which is coming through from the sun indirectly. So even you're seeing Krishna in the form of the stained glass, and you're also seeing Krishna in the form of the illuminating power that enables you to see the stained glass. See? Even if you're looking at a traffic light, the electrical power is indirectly in a manifestation of the energy of the sun, actually, ultimately, if you trace it back. So actually, everything that's visible to our eyes is a manifestation of Krishna. It's his energy. And he also says in the Gita, I am the sound in ether. So even if you hear someone honking their horn, honk, 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 that is actually a manifestation of Krishna. So in this way, by studying the Bhagavad Gita, taking up the process of Krishna consciousness under the guidance of Guru and Vaishnavas in the scriptures, then we become very, very fixed in remembering the Lord. And then, of course, there are six other items as well to engage in puja, just like we offer the arti. There's other items too. But those three are the main thing. The main thing is hearing and chanting, and then if you do that nicely, then remembrance will automatically be there without any extraneous effort. Whatever you hear about and talk about, throughout your day, that's what you're going to be thinking about in your mind. If you start talking about, in America, the people like to talk about sports. I guess they do the same thing in Germany. Maybe it's hockey here. I don't know what the big sport. In America, it's football and baseball. And some basketball, some, but football is, and baseball are big topics in America. So, somebody's talking about football and baseball all the time, and that's what they're thinking about in their mind. So the idea is you find a way to, arrange your life in such a way that you have a lot of hearing and chanting to do about Krishna. That's the purpose of ISKCON, is to create a facility. Just like, this is facility here. That's ISKCON facility here, and we have come together because ISKCON is right here in Cologne. We have come together now for a hearing and chanting session about Krishna. And what this is doing for each of us, each of the three of us, is this is empowering each of us to advance further on the pathway back to home, back to God. And so I'm getting empowered from this, and so are you. We're all equally getting empowered. Doesn't matter if you're speaking or you're hearing, the power is the same. The empowerment comes according to the quality of absorption. That's all. According to the quality of absorption in the topics of Krishna. So, we could see if there's any, do you have any questions? You have any questions? Yes.
It is, when we are fully occupied to think about Krishna, in our dreams, are we also going in other worlds, in Krishna's world, for example?
Well, actually, whenever you're thinking of Krishna, whether in waking or dreaming, you're in Krishna's world. When you remember Krishna, you are in Krishna's world.
But,
even if you think, even right here, talking about Krishna, we are not in Germany. We are in the spiritual world right now. Because we are talking about Krishna, we're hearing about Krishna, remembering Krishna. So remembering Krishna in your waking state or your dreaming state, in either case, you are in the spiritual world by doing that. Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that you've achieved complete spiritual perfection when you dream about Krishna, that you regain your original spiritual form. I'm not saying that. You understand? There is a stage where you actually regain your original spiritual form that exists in the spiritual world. You have a form in the spiritual world, but you've forgotten it. There will be a stage when that form, when it become absolutely pure, that form will actually become revived, and that identity, the eternal identity you have in the pastime of Krishna, you will become resituated in that identity as a cowherd girl, a cowherd boy, or different sort of many, many different varieties of relationships in the spiritual world. But it's not that when you dream that you're going into your original svarup or original spiritual form. Unless, of course, if we become pure devotees, then that's possible. In one's dream, one could actually be in one's... But see, right now, in our dream state, we are still entrapped within the subtle body. To actually realize your true original spiritual form, you have to become totally free, not of the gross bodily identification, but you have to also become free of subtle body identification. The subtle body, the gross body is composed of earth, water, fire, air, and ether. The subtle body is composed of mind, intelligence, and false ego. So to fully revive your original spiritual identity, you have to get free of the influence of both the gross and the subtle bodies. When you dream at night, you travel. It's sometimes they call it the astral body also. Astral travel, they call it sometimes. When you sleep at night, you are doing astral travel in your subtle body. You're going here and there, different places. But you're still within the material world. But if you become a pure devotee, you become completely free of identification with this gross body or the subtle body. And in that state of pure bhakti, you can actually regain your original identity in the spiritual world. But as long as you have any degree, even a slight degree of material desires, you will not be able to get free of the identification with the subtle body. Yes.
Is this the so-called fourth dimension, the Turiya Samadhi?
Actually, Krishna consciousness is beyond such a fourth dimension. Prabhupada sometimes calls it the fifth dimension. Of course, he actually uses the term in an entirely different context. The Prabhupada uses devotional service as the fifth dimension in this context. The first four dimensions, it's an entirely different context, is religiosity, Economic development, sense gratification, and liberation are considered the first four dimensions. And then bhakti is considered the fifth dimension. Prabhupada uses it in that way. But in another sense, in more of a sense than that you're thinking about it, what do they call the four? There's time, there's height, width, length, and what's the fourth dimension? What do they call the fourth dimension?
Fourth dimension. Vierte Dimension.
What's the fourth dimension?
Distrubhya Samadhi stand.
They call it Samadhi?
Yes.
Yeah, well, the fact is, in terms of what you're asking, Krishna consciousness is, or the perfectional stage of Krishna consciousness, is completely beyond time and space.
There's another word for it, nirguna.
Nirguna. This word nirguna is actually misunderstood by the impersonalists. They think that there's two types of Brahman. There's nirguna Brahman and saguna Brahman. They say that nirguna Brahman is the perfection, when Brahman has no qualities. And that saguna Brahman is this material existence. When Brahman has qualities, this is its imperfect stage, or imperfect state. So they say the imperfect state of Brahman is saguna Brahman, which is this material existence. And the perfection is nirguna Brahman, where there's no qualities. Everything becomes quality-less. But that is an incorrect understanding, because actually there's no such thing as quality-lessness. There's no such thing. It's impossible for there to be a state where there's no qualities. You can't have such a thing. It doesn't exist. It's an impossibility. The real meaning of nirguna is devoid, because that supreme absolute truth is simultaneously nirguna and saguna. The absolute truth is nirguna in the sense that it is free of any material qualities. And it is saguna in the sense that it is full of all spiritual qualities. And what are the spiritual qualities? They are eternity, knowledge, and bliss. The material qualities are passion, ignorance, and goodness. You see? So, in the imperfect stage, conditioned consciousness, we are under the influence of goodness, passion, and ignorance. But when we achieve perfection, then we regain our eternal nature, which is eternal, composed of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. So it's not that in the perfectional stage there are no qualities. There are no material qualities. That's the difference. How can, if they say that the original Supreme is devoid of qualities, then where from, how can qualities possibly manifest if the Supreme doesn't have any qualities? Where would the qualities possibly come from? Out of nothing? Does anything ever come out of nothing? No. So it's not possible to derive qualities from that which is qualityless, which is absolutely devoid of qualities. So therefore, the original source is full of qualities, but not under the influence of the material modes of nature, of goodness, passion, and ignorance. That is qualities which is nirguna, beyond the material influence, beyond the influence of the material nature. Just like the day, just like a cloudy gray day in Germany, which is quite often during the winter especially, you see. The day has two different qualities. When you're on the ground, it's gray and dreary. But when you get on Lufthansa Airlines and you take off and you go through the clouds, all of a sudden you see, over Germany there was a beautiful sunny day, but nobody was seeing it because the clouds covered everyone on the ground. You see. So that day actually has two qualities depending on where you are. It's a beautiful sunny day if you're high enough. Otherwise, if you're below, if you're in the gunas, then it's a dreary, gray day. Yeah.
Can you give us some knowledge about Sveta Dvipa?
About what?
Sveta Dvipa.
Sveta Dvipa. Yes, Sveta Dvipa is a spiritual planet here in this material world. Lord Vishnu actually resides there. So there's a milk ocean there, and it is a transcendental abode which exists in this material world. So there's not much you can really say about it. If you really want to know more, you have to become a pure devotee so you can go there. You know, this process of Krishna consciousness will give you the ability to actually, if you like, you can go and visit Svetadvipa. If you become a pure devotee, you can go there. See, right now you're a prisoner of the material modes of nature, the gunas, passion, ignorance, and goodness. You're a prisoner. But if you become a pure devotee of Krishna, then you'll achieve complete freedom to do anything and everything in Krishna's service, even if visiting Svetadvipa, personally going to Svetadvipa and meeting Lord Vishnu there. You can do that, become a pure devotee. There's no restriction if you achieve pure bhakti. There's no restriction on your movements. You can go anywhere you want within the universe. There's actually millions, this is only one universe, there's millions and billions of universes in this material world. And on the other side of the vast creation, there is the spiritual side, which is much bigger. This material world is only 1/4 portion of the vast spiritual sky. This is the prison. We are in the prison house of the Lord's kingdom. This material existence is the prison. So, if you will take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master, take shelter of the association of Vaishnavas, and take shelter of the guidelines coming from the scripture, then we guarantee that you'll become a pure devotee of Krishna and you'll have complete freedom. Yes?
Are you a Goswami?
Question is, am I a Goswami? Goswami means one who is engaging all of his senses in the service of Krishna. So, of course, the Goswami, he doesn't think that he's a Goswami. He always thinks that, in a very humble way, he thinks that I'm, you know, he's always praying to Krishna. He doesn't say, yes, I am a Goswami. Now, the title Goswami is given to those in the renounced order of life. But the practical Goswami can be achieved by any devotee. Whether they're married, whether they're single, doesn't matter. A woman, man, it doesn't matter. If one analyzes what I'm doing throughout the day, then you can see that I'm actually am a Goswami. Because I get up in the morning, early in the morning. Even last night, we went to bed at midnight. We got up
after midnight.
12:30, we went to bed after a program in Vokum. We got up at 4:15 for Mangalarti.
3:30.
So it's three hours sleep. So Goswami means who engages his senses 24 hours in Krishna's service. So if you come, you travel with me and observe me on the rest of my year. I don't know if it's practical, but if you were to travel with me on the rest of my European tour and see, you know, what I'm doing 24 hours a day, you will see that I'm always engaged in Krishna's service. I'm hearing about Krishna, I'm chanting Krishna's name, I'm taking prasadam, I'm, you know, cleansing the body for Krishna, I'm attending the programs of the temple, I'm answering emails, I'm talking with Mataji about Krishna, we talk about Krishna together, you know, I'm reading Krishna conscious literature, I hear Krishna conscious kirtans. You'll see that I'm doing nothing but Krishna consciousness 24 hours a day. So, yes, I'm a Goswami. Because I'm 24 hours a day engaged in Krishna consciousness. And I can make you a Goswami also, if you like.
I would like to, for all of us, for the whole world.
Yes. So you become a Goswami, and then you become empowered to make the whole world into Goswami.
If Krishna wants it.
Yes, Krishna. No, not if Krishna wants. If you want, Krishna already wants. You have my. You can write me.
I don't have a computer.
No computer. Okay. You can always write me snail, regular mail then, if you want. Okay. If you have any questions, you have already. You're welcome to correspond with me. But it's not a question of if Krishna wants. Krishna does want. The question is, do you want?
He says, "Sarva dharma
tvaitvendya." Yeah. He's already said, "I want you to fully surrender to me." and spread this Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. He's already said, now it's a question of you, whether you want.
Lord Chaitanya, he said that if we really surrender, then we should live in not here, we should live in India.
No, Lord Chaitanya never said that.
Oh, I've read it today.
You should tell me what the verse is. I think you've misunderstood it. Yeah. This is why guru is required, because, you know, sometimes we misunderstand things. Lord Chaitanya never said that we had to move to India.
If somebody's a good devotee.
Somebody's a...
There is a verse in Ishapanishad also, that residing in the Vrindavan.
Oh, the nectar of instruction?
Yeah, nectar of the residing in the holy place.
Yes, there are some verses like that, but that also includes bringing Vrindavan here. This is Vrindavan here also. The holy Dham of Vrindavan is manifest right here in this building. And you should also make your home. It's a fact that living in Vrindavan is one of the items of bhakti. That's a fact. So that means that you should either live in Vrindavan or you should make your own residence into Vrindavan. Now, it's also the primary injunction, if you read the scriptures, that you should take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. And then he will then tell you whether you should live in Cologne or whether you should move to Vrindavan. But in either case, I will recognize you. But, I have to answer each question in depth. You should not be too eager for another question. You should be very eager to understand fully the answer to the question you did ask. That's how you advance.
But I have understand.
Huh?
I understand. So that's why I asked the next question. Otherwise, I would not.
Okay, let the speaker speak also.
Yeah.
but your understanding needs to become deep. That you have understood, I accept. But that you have understood in the fullest and deepest possible way, that I do not accept. You need to expand the depth of your understanding. So that for that reason, when a question is being answered, you should go on hearing until the speaker has finished, and then you ask another question. That's the proper etiquette.
Excuse me.
So now you may ask another question.
I also think that Vrindavan is in the heart.
So what's the question?
Is it true or not?
Oh, okay. Yes, Vrindavan is in your heart, but you have to add one. It's not an artificial thing that you automatically live in Vrindavan because you think you are. You have to master the art of living in Vrindavan, because it's described that the spiritual master is the revealer of Vrindavan. So one has to actually fully surrender to a bona fide spiritual master to actually have access to that Vrindavan which is within your heart. When you've completely surrendered to the bona fide spiritual master, yes, then you're living in Vrindavan at every minute. But there's also going to be an imitation Vrindavan where you think you're in Vrindavan, but you're not really. In other words, you can only really fully enter Vrindavan when you become a true Goswami, when you've fully mastered the mind, words, anger, tongue, belly, and genitals. Only then can you actually enter Vrindavan. And that requires training under a bona fide spiritual master. You see? Some of them think, I mean, I'll give you an example. I met a girl in the U.S. who had gone to Radhakunda in Vrindavan, and she met some so-called guru on purpose, because this guru had told her, well, you were such and such gopi in Krishna's lila, and this is what you do for Krishna in his pastime. So she was thinking like this, that she was just, I'm such and such gopi. And then at night she was having illicit sex. She was having sexual intercourse with an unmarried woman, having sexual intercourse with some boy from America there in the holy place, which is a very sinful thing. And she was thinking that now I'm living in Vrindavan because I know I'm such and such gopi. But she was doing all sin. Even while she was in Vrindavan itself, she was having illicit sexual connection with a man. So you cannot artificially live in Vrindavan just by thinking I'm in Vrindavan. No. It requires complete surrender unto the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master. And then you will truly be living in Vrindavan at every minute, wherever you are, anywhere in the world. Questions more?
My English is not so good. I always have this question. So we have a Swaroop. Everybody,
yes.
Even the Christians,
everyone. Every jiva, even the dog walking down the street has a Swaroop.
But for example, the Christians, they don't know.
Right.
So they follow Jesus Christ. And
the trouble is they don't really follow him. Christ said, the Bible says, thou shalt not kill.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't go back to Godhead.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They come back as animals.
But I heard,
mm-hmm.
I don't know whether
it's
true,
right.
I ask you, that Jesus Christ, there is a planet where the Christ go, they go.
Yes, I've also heard.
Yes. And
so that is there. So that means if someone actually is a pure devotee of Lord Jesus, they can go and be his eternal associate in the spiritual world. That's all right.
Yes, is it? But for me, I mean, I'm not a not even a devotee. So I. But this is where I'm attracted to this bhakti yoga. And this is, if somebody goes back to Jesus Christ, do they have to come back to earth one day? Because I think everybody should go back to Krishna.
Jesus is a pure devotee of Krishna.
Yeah. Is it this?
So if you're with Jesus, that is in the spiritual world, he's also connected with Krishna.
Oh, yeah.
So that is all right. There are different.
There is
different Vaikuntha planets in the spiritual world, where there are different forms of Vishnu who preside over those planets, and one can go wherever one's heart actually desires to serve God. Even a Christian, a pure Christian who went back to the spiritual world and served Jesus there. If he wanted, he could always transfer to the Krishna planet.
Oh, yeah. That's there.
Because he has, it's just like once you get a Euro visa, right? You can go to all the, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Once you get a European visa, mm-hmm, you can come mm-hmm, to any country.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So once you have a visa to the spiritual world, if you want to go from the Jesus planet to the Krishna planet, you can do that with no problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's only by your desire you can transfer over
mm-hmm.
with no problem.
Mm-hmm. But in when somebody goes back to Jesus, there is not like heaven is Swaroop. Is it sort of the same?
No, they can have their no. Jesus Christ, his mode is worshiping God in awe and reverence. So that would be some Vaikuntha planet. That is also Swaroop.
Mm-hmm.
The I don't know what form Jesus would have in the spiritual world, but. I mean, I've heard that Prabhupada said he had his own planet there, but that would be a Vaikuntha planet where the inhabitants have four arms and they have a Swaroop there.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of they are serving, they are.
It opens up an interesting question though, is the original Swaroop, is every Swaroop two armed or four armed?
That's
an interesting question.
No,
I don't know all the answers, but
they sort of are. How do you say they serve Krishna? They serve Krishna.
They serve Krishna.
They serve. It's they are eternal servants. If it's Jesus, he's a
Prabhupada said that Jesus is a pure devotee of Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you go back to Jesus. And if you actually become, go back to Jesus, then you're in good shape. You're in the spiritual world.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difficulty? Christ is a pure devotee of Krishna. So if you go back to the spirit, you go with Jesus, then you're in the spiritual world. You have access to Krishna also. Just like mm-hmm. Jesus would have access to Krishna, you would also have access to Krishna.
But one has to follow Jesus.
Huh?
One has to follow Jesus.
Trouble is they don't follow. Yes, that's the problem.
I know. Mm-hmm.
You see, I grew up as a Christian, but I couldn't find any, even one person in the Christian church that I could see was a bona fide guru who could actually show me the way to become a true follower of Jesus. I was thinking I was born 2,000 years too late. I was thinking if I had been here when Jesus was here, I would have just renounced everything and just wanted to become one of his disciples. You see? I wanted to be a disciple, but there's where is the scope for actually being a disciple in the modern Christian church? I didn't see it. I didn't see it anywhere. Nowhere did I see there was a scope for being a genuine disciple of Jesus. But I found that Srila Prabhupada was offering a genuine program. You could become a bona fide disciple on the spiritual pathway back to Godhead. Jesus was no longer, his discipleship was no longer practically available because the disciplic line has been broken 2,000 years ago. But Prabhupada is representing an unbroken disciplic line. So by connecting with the line of Prabhupada, now you can actually become a perfect disciple of God and of God's devotee. You see? So we're offering you discipleship. If you want to be a disciple, one who fully brings their senses under control, a Goswami, then we will do that. In our Krishna Consciousness Movement, we're offering our members, you can come here as a guest and a member. If you're serious, really, really serious about achieving perfection, then you can aspire for discipleship within our movement, where you bring your senses completely under control, become a master of your own senses. Yes?
And that's the guru. Does he know his disciples? Mm-hmm. Or is it anyone who can be a disciple?
Does the guru know the disciple? Anyone can choose the guru to be disciple. They surrender to the spirit. I'm sorry.
What is the point? Give me the question.
The question is, she is asking that the guru knows the disciple or anyone can take the guru?
You have to have a relationship with the spiritual master. It's not that Allah, without the guru knowing it, I will become his disciple. No, it has to be something that's mutually known and understood, both back and forth between the guru and the disciple. The disciple voluntarily submits himself or herself to the instructions received from the spiritual master as an eternal relationship. A relationship of eternal obedience to the instructions received from the spiritual master. And from the spiritual master's side, he makes the agreement that I will do everything, I'm fully dedicated to delivering you from the cycle of birth and death. Even if I have to take birth again in this material world, I will, if you continue to follow my instructions, I guarantee that I will liberate you from this material existence. It's a covenant, a contract, spiritual contract made between two people. The guru, he makes his commitment, I promise that I will do everything, my eternal existence is fully dedicated to liberating you from birth and death. The disciple makes the pledge, I promise to serve your instructions. Whatever you tell me to do, Guru Maharaj, I'm simply your servant, you simply instruct me. From now on, I'm simply under your direction. That is an eternal relationship. It does not terminate at the time of death. It's an eternal relationship. That's the relationship that I made with Prabhupada, you see. That's the relationship that Prabhupada made with Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. That's the relationship that Arjuna had with Krishna. It's called discipleship. And that's when we really get serious about being a disciple and having a spiritual master. That's when we fully are empowered then to bring our senses completely under control. The guru is a necessary, just like if you want to bake a cake, but you try to bake it without the baking powder, it won't go anywhere. You just sit there flat in the pan. No matter how long you bake it, it just sit in the bottom of the pan and get hard. You put the baking powder in, then it goes. So the spiritual master is the baking powder and the formula of devotional service and the recipe. He's an essential ingredient in the process of Krishna consciousness. By making sure that you have a guru, you have a person that you reveal your heart to, that you take guidance from, you take shelter of that person. Of course, it's not artificial. You have to associate with a person for some time and make sure that this person is actually worthy of your trust. That's a very big thing to put myself under someone's direction. That means I have complete faith that they will not exploit me in any way, that they're acting purely out of love for God and love for me, without any motive of exploitation. So it takes some time. Our acharyas say you should spend at least 6 months getting to know the person. You don't just blindly take a guru, then you can easily be misled. But you should spend time getting to know the person, either by meeting with them or corresponding with them, you see, over, back and forth correspondence. And that way you can build a relationship with the prospective spiritual master. So in this way, if you cultivate love and trust and see if this person is actually worthy of giving my committing myself to be under their direction permanently. But if you actually can find a person that is purely living according to the instructions received from his spiritual master, that person is qualified to be your spiritual master. And if you surrender to him, then you'll become spiritually perfect. And you can then teach others how to be spiritually perfect. You'll become empowered to teach others how to achieve spiritual perfection. So it's actually a very exciting thing to become a bona fide disciple. It's a very exciting thing. Because you do the highest good for yourself and you become empowered to do the highest good for the whole world. You see? Yes.
Is the disciple choosing or Krishna is giving the direction?
That's a very nice question. Actually, the disciple chooses based on the inspiration that Krishna gives him. It's both, actually. It's a combination of both, to be honest. Krishna inspires you. This person is your guru. And you go, yeah, this person, I want this person. I want this person. This person is my spiritual master. I know he is. I want to be his disciple. So it's actually a combination of your desire and Krishna's inspiration working together in tandem.
So the guru is like Krishna.
He is like Krishna in one sense. Just like he is not God, no. But he's the representative of God. He acts with the empowerment. Just like a wealthy man, he may not go to the courtroom. He'll then hire his attorney to act for him. He gives the attorney what's called power of attorney to act on his behalf. So Krishna gives the spiritual master power of attorney to act on his behalf. That's why it's said that if we please our spiritual master, then Krishna is pleased. He is not God, but we give him all the honor and respect that is due to God because he is God's representative. It's like I may work for the Ford Motor Company. So my job security depends on doing my job in such a way that Mr. Ford is pleased with me. But do I directly report to Mr. Ford? That would be impractical for all the workers to have to directly report to Mr. Ford. No, Mr. Ford has set up managers and sub-managers and sub-managers. So you simply report to your particular manager, you see. Then he reports to his manager, who reports to his manager, and finally it reaches Mr. Ford. So you have your spiritual master that you've chosen to surrender to, and he reports to his spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, who reports to his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati. And in this way, Krishna is pleased with you, but he wants you to offer that, your spiritual master, all the respect that is due to Krishna. He wants you to see that you give that respect to his representative because he is acting on behalf of Krishna. That's why we bow down before the spiritual master. You see, because he is Krishna's representative. Even though he's Even though he's a jiva soul, just like you are, but still he's acting with the empowerment given by Krishna, so we give him the respect that we would give to Krishna. Just like we bow down before the deities, we also bow down before the spiritual master. Question.
So the guru is like a transparent medium for Krishna.
The guru. He is a transparent medium for Krishna. That's right. Prabhupada always said like that, transparent via medium. Again and again in Prabhupada's books, you will see that term, transparent via medium.
What is the meaning of via?
Via means by means of.
True.
We went to Bokum via or via the Autobahn.
Via
means means something that by means of. It's something that connects you. Something that connects you. Just like you came upstairs via the staircase. You came to this room via the stairs. By means of the stairs. With the help of the stairs. By utilizing the stairs. That's via. I don't know if they say via or via.
Every language.
Via. It's transparent. I always via.
Via.
I've heard both. I think it's both pronunciations are valid. I think it comes from the French, actually. But anyway, it means transparent means he purely represents God. And medium, and via medium means through connecting with him, you're connected with God. It's like you can speak with me directly or you can call me on the telephone. And the telephone becomes a transparent via medium between you and me. Because whatever you say, I can hear it. Yes.
Is there a difference of the transparency of the gurus?
There can be, yes. There are three different levels of spiritual masters described in the Upadeshamrita. There is the Kanishta Adhikari Guru, the Majjhim Adhikara Guru, and the Uttama Adhikara Guru. The pure, completely pure and transparent spiritual master is called Uttama Adhikari. Others can also act as a spiritual master. Even the devotional servant, a spiritual master who is in the middle, he is called Majjhim Adhikari, which means middle. If he is strictly following his Uttama Adhikari Guru, then he will also have the same transparency. Because he's acting purely as an agent of his spiritual master, who is an Uttama Adhikari. But the ideal thing, of course, is to have a spiritual master who is himself an Uttama Adhikari in the highest level of Krishna Bhakti. That's the ideal thing. So Prabhupada says one should actually look for such a spiritual master who is completely in the highest level. That's the one you really want, because that's where you get the best connection.
As what would you consider yourself? As which of the three kinds?
Yes. Well, the first point is an Uttama Adhikari spiritual master will never advertise himself as such. When one actually comes to that position, one doesn't even... Such a spiritual master is in a state of complete humility. He feels that he's not even a devotee. He feels himself very fallen. So an actual Uttama Adhikari will never say, I'm an Uttama Adhikari. If someone says, I'm an Uttama Adhikari, then you should run away. Because they're advertising themselves. A bona fide Uttama Adhikari, I never heard Prabhupada say, I'm an Uttama Adhikari, but he was definitely an Uttama Adhikari. You have to judge by the symptoms.
He's an Uttama Adhikari, but once he said, I'm a fifth class.
Yeah, Prabhupada humbly said he was not even in the Varnashram system. He said, I'm a fifth class man. So, you have to judge who's an Uttama Adhikari he's not going to say it about himself. You have to judge it by his, you have to study in Prabhupada's books, what are the symptoms of an Uttama Adhikari, and see, does this person have the symptoms? For example, an Uttama Adhikari is always thinking how to expand the Krishna consciousness movement. He's always thinking that way, 24 hours a day. That's one symptom. He's always thinking how to expand this Krishna consciousness movement. He's always thinking of the welfare of others. He's not just thinking of himself. He takes care of his body because it's Krishna's property. Feeds it, he clothes it, gives it, you know, a coat in the winter so it doesn't fall sick. But he does that, but his main concern 24 hours a day is how can I push forward this Krishna consciousness movement for the deliverance of all the suffering people of this world. That is an uttamadhikari. Yes.
As a disciple of a Uttama Adhikari,
yeah,
or Kanishta Adhikari, or a Mat, the middle one,
Majra,
yeah, is there a difference?
Well, actually, we shouldn't, even though one could have a Kanishta Guru, one should not, because they are not at all qualified to guide one properly. The Majjhima Adhikari devotee means one who is fully surrendered to his spiritual master. He is also qualified to be a spiritual master. Even if he's not fully on the highest platform, if he is strictly following the instructions of his Uttama Adhikari spiritual master, then he has from his Uttama Adhikari spiritual master the power of attorney to fully connect you on the highest level. So a Majjhima a spiritual master who is strictly following his Uttama Adhikari spiritual master does carry the full Uttama potency. It is transmitted through him if he's strictly following. He's chanting 16 rounds every day. He follows the principles. He rises early for the morning program. He's always engaged in Krishna conscious activities according to the instructions that he received from his spiritual master. The potency of the Uttamadhikari is available through the Majjhimadhikari who is strictly following his Uttamadhikari spiritual master. Because he's sincerely, honestly, and purely representing his Uttamadhikari spiritual master. And he does have the potency of the Uttamadhikari invested in him by his pure following of the Uttamadhikari spiritual master. But definitely avoid a Kanishta. A strictly following Majjhim is good, or an Uttama, either is good for achieving perfection. Yes.
And the disciple, does he have to have qualities to get Uttama Adhikari?
For the disciple should not immediately think of becoming Uttama Adhikari. He should first think, how can I become a Majjhima Adhikari? Because you can't jump artificially to Uttama. That's a very, very exalted position to be in. The first thing, one has to understand what are the differences. The Kanishta is someone who comes to the temple and simply wants to see the deities but doesn't want to respect the devotees. If a devotee is giving the class, he's not interested. He's saying, I've come to see the god, I've come to give some money and beg some blessing that I can become wealthy and then I go away. That's Kanishta. He has no respect for the Lord's devotees. The Majjhimadhikari devotee, he sees four distinctions. He sees the Supreme Lord is there, I must surrender to him. He sees the Lord's devotees are there, I must serve them with love and learn from them. He sees that the innocent non-devotees are there who would be eager to hear about Krishna if they had the chance to hear about him. So he approaches the innocent people and tells them all about Krishna. And he also sees there are people who are very inimical to any discussion of Krishna, and they don't waste their time with such persons who will simply find fault with Krishna and become blasphemous. So that is the Majjhimadhikari devotee. He's a very advanced devotee, Majjhimadhikari. The Majjhimadhikari has firm faith in the scriptures, but he's not always fully expert in giving logical arguments. The Uttamadhikari devotee has firm faith in the scripture. He's also very, very expert at defeating all opposing arguments. That's another qualification of the Uttama spiritual master. Doesn't matter anyone can come and say anything, and he can defeat them with scripture and with logic. Any opposing arguments. Questions more? You have any? So, we're wrapping it up. We have to get ready to go now. Tomorrow we're leaving early in the morning for Finland. And we appreciate very much that you nice souls have come to hear from us. And please continue nicely following this. If you you can always contact me by regular mail or email. If you have any questions, we can give you any further guidance or inspiration. We're happy to be of service to you. That's our duty, given by our spiritual master. That anyone who comes to us seeking knowledge, seeking guidance, seeking inspiration, that we have to fully give ourselves to you to help you to achieve those, you know, the proper understanding. Yes.
One comment I would like to make. Taking guidance in the vein is not very good.
Guidance in the...
In vain.
Vain?
Means just like that. Just asking.
Oh, vain means you take the instruction, you don't apply it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now are you both chanting japa? You chant the Hare Krishna on the beads? You're chanting japa 16 rounds? You're chanting 16 rounds regularly? You also?
No, if I may. I didn't want to... I want to ask for... But well, now we
no, now you must ask.
No, yes. I chanted many years ago for about 3 years or more. I chanted my 16
rounds. Oh, you did.
And sort of someday I couldn't. It was some... But no, it was... And I chanted less and less and less. And I found... Well... The motivation was, I wanted to show myself I can chant. And in case I want to get a spiritual master, I need to chant 16 rounds. And I think Krishna knew, and he stopped me. And so I started...
Krishna never stopped you from chanting, okay? Krishna will never stop you from chanting.
But
that was Maya.
He thought, said, think. No, and then... I started to chant less, and when I sort of chant 4 rounds, I have it, I can be with the mantra. Before, I was chanting syllables, letters, words. It wasn't with my heart, but if I chant more slow and really be there, after 4 hours, I get such an energy that I think I can stand it. That's Maya, maybe, but...
Well, see, your problem is you're chanting for your own... You're trying to chant for your own happiness.
And, yeah.
That's the problem. That's the problem.
I'm not happy in the material world. This is my happiness, but it's for me.
See, here's the secret and how to... Yeah. Someone just wrote me that they say, I don't have any taste in chanting. How will I get taste? Here's the simple formula. In fact, this morning a young lady came wanting to know how she can get taste in chanting. It's a very simple formula, how to get taste in chanting. Instead of chanting for your pleasure, chant to please Krishna. Mm. Mm. Krishna wants you to chant. Mm. Do it to please Him. Mm. He's giving you everything. He's giving you the food you eat. Mm. He's giving you the air you breathe. He's giving you clothing. He's giving you friends. He's giving you everything. So you should show your appreciation.
Mm. I rather stand there and sing. I just want to... I don't want anything sort of this way. And I want to think of Him. It's more... It's for me...
Thinking about Him is nice, but now you have to please Him also.
Yeah.
And, Shri Ganitai Ki Jai. Thinking about Krishna is very nice thing, but now you have to think, how can I please Krishna?
And then it's when I sleep, when I lie in bed, there I think of Krishna, and I couldn't chant, you know, with talking. I sort of started.
You can write me about this in the email. So we'll stop.
I have no.
You can write me in the email about this. So we'll stop the class now.
Yeah.
We thank you very much. Naja Vidja, Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Thank you.